On a special post-NBA Finals edition of The Good Word, Dan Devine joins me to talk about Game 2. We talk about Boston dismantling the Dallas offense, Kyrie Irving, who can't get going. And we wonder if Jrue Holiday is the frontrunner for Finals MVP. All that and a lot more on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We're part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is late Sunday night. I am live in Boston, where the Celtics took a 2-0 lead in the NBA Finals over the Dallas Mavericks. I am joined today, tonight, by my good friend, your man, our man, Dan Devine. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing a hell of a lot better than the Dallas Mavericks. They're going back to Dallas with, you know, getting lumped up a little bit and two games away from a long summer. So I don't got that going for me, which is nice.
I mean, I wish I had a long summer.
Well, listen, don't look too far ahead. It might be right around the corner here, man. We got to see. I mean, if the way the structure of these games went in Boston, if that carries over to Dallas, we might not have too much longer to go either.
Now, I'm curious how you saw this game.
I would say, I mean, to be honest with you, as I know the final is 105-98, right? So it felt closer in some capacities than game one. You know, Dallas is within five with a minute 15 to go. There's a couple of possessions could go one way or the other. Huge, chase down block by Derek White and Jaylen Brown that maybe
foul. Chase down foul.
Yeah,
chase
maybe. I mean, foul. Like, yeah, it was a hand in the back there. Jason Kidd definitely wanted that call. I can't blame him for it. You know, if PJ Washington gets that to go or gets the foul call, gets the bucket, gets the free throws, that's a 3-point game with a minute to go. And that's, you know, obviously that's how Dallas is built, right? You got clutch shot makers in Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. We haven't seen Kyrie make too many of those in the series, but, you know, put him in the crunch time situation. That could be an opportunity there. But, you know, Boston's able to get that stop, able to get the layup down the other end, come away with the win. But I think generally speaking, how I saw this game was the stuff that happened in game one happened in game two. It's just Boston didn't make threes early. Like, for the most part, the defensive strategy of we're going to force Luka and Kyrie to make tough contested 2-point shots as much as we possibly can, one-on-one defense, and not let anybody else get off. Boston did that. It's just Luka busted him up enough through that first half that they were able to eventually Boston had to start bringing a little bit more help. Luka was able to start spraying the ball a little bit more. Still not getting any of those 3-point shots to go down. Still not getting any of that complimentary offense to go down. We're still going to make Kyrie Irving prove it to us. He has not yet done it. We are going to continue to space the floor, get downhill, drive and kick. We're not just going to say Jason Tatum, go score 35 and be the bell cow. Be that downhill facilitator. Him and Jaylen Brown combined for 19 assists in this game. Like all of the terms of engagement that Boston set in game one carried over to game two. So the final score looked different. If not for one or two plays, one way or the other, it could have shaken up. But I think what we've seen is, yes, Boston can win these games with 16 threes, but now we know they can win it not hitting 16 threes. And I think if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan, that's got to be a little bit concerning.
Well, I see it slightly different. I feel like this was a game that Dallas, ultimately, if they lose this series, they will look at this and say, game two is the game that we should have stolen.
Absolutely.
It was on the table for them. Like, there were some swing plays. And I asked Kyrie Irving about it after the game. He said, you know what? That's just being in the garden. Remember at the end of the third quarter, pushing the lead back down to a manageable 6, right? And then Peyton Pritchard, walking Tommy point, right? Pulls a 3-pointer out of his ass, back up to 9. That's a huge difference between 6 and 9 entering the fourth quarter. I think it was 83-74. Then you had the Jrue Holiday masterpiece of a play where jumping the passing lane, it's a risk of the 8-second violation and everything else. Boom, gets the steal, throws everything off kilter, hits a 3. All of those things, those little bitty things, the margins seem to add up all in Boston's favor. Yet and still, this was a pretty close game with a minute left. Now, granted, Dallas was stalking the entire time. You never got the feeling that they were in control of the game. You never got like you said, Dan, the terms of engagement were being dictated by Boston everything from the point of attack defense to not having to overhelp and overcommit. Like, you can see the true difference between Minnesota's defense and how they had to play Luka Doncic and the way that Boston plays against Luka Doncic. You're not getting those advantages. You can finish above the rim. You're not making Boston have to make decisions. You're playing, this is almost like the perfect type of offense to play against Dallas. I mean, to play against Boston, because nobody's moving.
Yeah, I mean, and the sort of the tracking numbers haven't come out yet for game two. So we'll see what some of those advanced stats look like in the morning. But in game one, I think it was like barely over 200 passes for Dallas in game one, which is, I mean, they're not a heavy pass team anyway. They do a lot of isolation work, but still, like, that is dramatically below what the lowest ball movement offenses in the league do throughout the season. Dallas during the regular season, I believe they assisted on about 59% of their buckets. That's down to 44% in this series. They're just not creating those opportunities where Luka gets downhill and can spray, where Kyrie draws two and is able to kick, and everybody else is able to catch with run into a catch and make something happen, or catch and just go right up with it. And I think one of the big sort of the easy way to look at it is Boston has taken 68 spot up shots in the series. So Tatum, and you could picture it, right? Close your eyes. It's Tatum beating a guy off the dribble, Jaylen Brown beating a guy off the dribble, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, insert Celtic here, beating a guy off the dribble, 2 feet in the paint, defense collapse, kick, shot. Make or miss, but that's a good shot. Those are rhythm shots that Boston wants to create. In both games, so 34 of those in game one, 34 of those in game two. In two games, Dallas has created 28 of those. Fewer in two games than Boston has had in either games one or game two. And so that is like, and when those shots are getting created, you saw it earlier tonight, like when, as I mentioned earlier, Luka is doing enough beating you up off the dribble and beating you up one-on-one, hitting those ridiculous turnaround fadeaways. Like, eventually Boston does bring more help, does start to show two on the ball. But where's the ball going when he's getting off the ball? It's two come to him. It's a pass to Derek Jones Jr. for an above the break three. All right, man, go ahead, make that. It's PJ Washington getting it and then being able to dribble downhill to get into a contested floater. All right, you make that, you tip your cap. It's Daniel Gafford posting up. Like, I don't know the last time Daniel Gafford had three post-up buckets in a week, let alone in a game. And it makes sense. He's got Tatum on him. Make Tatum work. Take advantage of the size differential there. But if that's the way you got to get offense, it's so much different from drive, kick, 40% shooter, taking a rhythm shot. And so I think that's what the first couple of games here have shown me. Like, Dallas was – we saw them dismantle that Minnesota defense. And Boston is basically rendering them unable to function. And that's like, even though over the course of the full season, Minnesota was, led Boston just about every statistical category, in the practical application of the way their defense works, it is just fundamentally better suited to deal with Dallas and to make Dallas play left-handed. And this is where, I mean, a lot of it comes back to the Kyrie Irving conversation, because Luka Doncic has been, he's putting up numbers, he's getting his shots, he was even able to get other people involved a little bit tonight. Somebody else got to come to the party, and you got to figure that Kyrie Irving's got to be a big part of it.
Yeah, I put it like this. If there's one thing that I can say going into game three, I would venture, unless Kyrie Irving is out of gas, and that is entirely possible, right? I was just thinking about, like, oh, is it the Boston thing? And everybody wants to give all the credit to the Boston crowd for getting in his head. No, I just think he might be tired.
Let's go ahead. Let's you and me agree right here, right now, to give no credit to the people of Boston.
That's fine for me, okay? That's fine for me, because I don't know if you've known this, Dan Devine. Boston's kind of been on my ass the past day or so, okay?
Yeah, I saw a couple things. Saw a couple things about that.
Not just Boston, because, It's Boston and.
You're a conversation starter, Vinny, and we love that about you.
A shit starter, that's fine. I can take all that. I ain't tripping, right? But to the Kyrie point, tonight I felt like Kyrie got better looks. I thought he had decent looks in game one. I feel like tonight he had better looks, especially at the rim, but he just couldn't get it going. You know what I mean? Like the length, I'm wondering if Kyrie being the smallest player on the floor, even though, Jrue Holiday's not necessarily tall, but he's 6'4", long, stocky. Derek White is light in the pants, but long, springy, got hops, as we saw against, PJ Washington. Like, it's just length and it's hands, and you're wondering, man, is this the point where the deficiencies of this type of offense is going to come to bear? Like, Kyrie's going to play better, right? He's going to shoot better. He's going to hit shots. He hasn't hit a three-point shot this series. I guarantee you that changes in the first quarter of game three, right? But will that be enough considering what happens on the other side if Jason Tatum gets going offensively and if Kristaps Porzingis has another game like he had in game one? It feels like there are more paths for Boston to win than there are for Dallas to even get more than a couple games.
Couple things on that, because I think you're right. I think what we're seeing so far is just like the Celtics don't need to have one guy go off. It can, you know, it's a game of whack-a-mole. You plug up, you
need whack-a-mole. What the hell is that?
It's a like a arcade kind of game. You hit the little thing that pops up out of the hole with a hammer.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You hit that,
okay,
and then another one pops up somewhere else.
I thought you would give me some Two Americas. I was about to say, what the hell are you doing, Dan Devine?
All right, plugging up a dam. I got you.
Right. Once you said it, you have like the little hammer thing. You pop one, something else comes up. Got you.
That's exactly right.
I'm with you. We on the same page.
There we go. In this case, one America right now, me and you. But yeah, so like the Celtics are a situation where you put one guy down, another one's going to pop up. They create problems in a lot of different areas. Dallas creates giant problems with two guys. And if you can mitigate one of them, you are in business. And I think, you know, to your point, like Kyrie is going to play better. He's going to shoot better. I think it is entirely possible you are right. But through four games against the Celtics this season, two regular season, two playoff, Kyrie Irving has 70 points on 31 for 80 shooting. He's 4 for 22 from three against the Celtics this year. 13-7 assist to turnover ratio, so under 2-1. And he's taken 4 free throws in 120 minutes.
Whew.
Kyrie, the Kyrie that we saw throughout most of this postseason run, throughout much of the regular season, certainly throughout that last couple of months when Dallas really went on the run, that guy has not been available against the Boston Celtics. And I think a lot of it is, as you mentioned, the physicality, the strength of and the versatility defensively of Derek White and Drew Holiday. And then also when he's able to get, you know, gain the lane on those guys, there's length behind him and around him sort of everywhere. So the shots that are available to Kyrie, generally speaking, are the spectacular ones. And if, you know, again, I think Boston has generally played the odds on it and said, if he's going to make 15 of those, all right, we'll deal with it. But we don't think he's going to get 15 of those up and he's going to make them. And through four games against this team so far, Luka has had, I think, 30 points or triple doubles or 30 point triple doubles in all four of the games he's played against Boston this year. And Boston's 4-0. And that's, I think, where you have to look at with it. Another point I just quickly want to make on it.
Yeah.
You mentioned the, you know, when we get to the crunch time there and it's down 5, minute and 15 left, there's the should have been called a foul, but it wasn't. What happens after that play, I think, is interesting because Boston, to that point, had not been beating the crunch time offense allegations, right? Like all of the concerns about the way that they play in crunch time, where it can get meandering and aimless and maybe, why did you make that pass? Why did you take that shot? That stuff was all cropping up. When they get the ball, they push down after that block on PJ Washington. They did something really smart, which is as soon as they saw Kyrie Irving push PJ Washington up. PJ Washington runs back into the play and Kyrie was guarding up on the perimeter. And Kyrie says, no, you guard up high. I'll go low. So Kyrie retreats back to the corner to guard Jason Tatum. Other side of the floor, Luka Doncic is low. He's guarding Al Horford. So you got Tatum and Horford in the corners, Luka and Kyrie guarding them. Boston sees it, takes a beat, realizes it, goes into two-man action, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, because guess what? If we beat one guy up at the top, if Jaylen Brown can beat Maxi Kleber off the dribble, there is only Luka Doncic gassed and not moving that great, and Kyrie Irving gassed and maybe not moving that great as the low guys to protect the rim. Guess who's not protecting the rim? Is those two guys. So Jaylen Brown gets in, gets the layup, bucket, hammer, nail, coffin, and then there you go from there. So like that was a moment of poised play. That again, we do not always associate the word poise with Boston's late game offense.
Right.
But in that situation, they recognized who was where and how to manipulate the chessboard. And in a shaky couple of minutes, it got them across the finish line into a 2-0 lead.
Well, here's the thing. That's not a rarity that you pointed out, Kyrie being the low man. Mm-hmm. Kyrie was the low man a lot in the setup of the Celtics offense. Like, that's one of those strategic things that I'll give Joe Mazzulla a lot of credit for. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, Kyrie's going to get a lot of touch fouls, a lot of ticky-tack fouls, and he did. And once he got that second foul and stayed in the game, they were going right at him. Yep. They were trying to force that third foul, and it didn't gum up the offense, actually. I thought it was you take the risk. You run the risk of that. But Kyrie is only going to be so much of a willing defender to the point where he's just going to try to reach around you and get a steal and, you know, get out the way as opposed to playing solid. He's 6'1 or 6'2 possibly. Even if he plays solid, there's only so much that he's going to be able to do anyway.
Right.
But I want to be able to go over just a couple of the numbers with you.
Yeah.
6 of 26 from 3 for Dallas. And that's with Luka Doncic going 4 for 9, right? So that means outside of Luka, you are 2 for 17?
Yeah.
Did I get that? Is that like a full John Starks? That's a full John Starks in game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Why you got to bring up all, I mean, like, we're here, we're having a nice time together, having this conversation about the NBA Finals in Boston and hotel rooms and all these things, and you got to bring John Starks to me right now? You got to hurt my heart like that?
I'm sorry, you a Knicks fan?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was like...
Were you a Knicks fan?
I was 12 years old watching that, and my heart broke, like, you could feel it rip. That being said, all right, shouts out to John Starks, number 3 superstar. The point that you're making, though, especially a night where the Celtics do not have the touch, right? They open, I think, 1 of 9 in the first quarter. They're 3 for 15, I think, at halftime from three-point land. You get one of those outlier games, the PJ Washington in the middle of the OKC series, the Derek White from late in the OKC series. By the way, how you feel if you're OKC and you're like, where were these guys missing all these shots against us? Like, we were doing a lot of the same kind of stuff and a lot of the same kind of ideas. And where was that? Maybe, I don't know, Mark Degno squinting at the screen going like, what are we doing here? Why can't it be us? Anyway, you can, on a night where that is, as you mentioned, it is for the taking. They are not overwhelming you offensively. They are not close, you know, running away and slamming the door on you. It's there. It's Maxi Kleber not confident in his shot coming back from injury. It's Josh Green understanding that there's a reason that there's 15 feet of space in front of you. It's, you know, it's Derek Jones Jr. not getting to operate from the corners, having to do it from above the break, where he was, I think, under 30% for the regular season, and certainly hasn't been hot from there during the postseason. It's all short corner stuff for him. That's what his bread and butter's been. PJ Washington seems more comfortable when he gets it above the break, pumping and going more than just going right up with the shot. And he can make something happen with that. He's actually one of the few guys that can put the ball on the deck and, you know, get busy with it a little bit, get downhill. But it's just the shots are not going to people who are comfortable making them. I wonder, and you look down the bench, Tim Hardaway Jr., I don't think, got off the bench in this game, right? Didn't take off his warmups. You know, Dante Exum made one of those shots where there was 15 feet of space around him. You wonder if you see a little bit more of him as another complimentary playmaker and guy who could maybe make a shot. You just wonder where the auxiliary sources of offense are coming from that can knock down those shots. Because even if, like, I think that's the thing where maybe Boston looks at it and says, we started to bring more pressure and we didn't get burned. Like, those guys didn't hurt us. You look at the 8 assists that Luka had in the second half, and it's a lot of Daniel Gafford dump downs and, like, you know, PJ Washington floaters. We can live with those shots. So, yeah, if you're Dallas, you're wondering somebody, and I think Jason Kidd said it multiple times in the postgame, somebody else has to come to the party. We need another source of shot making. So it's, you got to get Kyrie right. You got to get Kyrie aggressive. And then where are those other shots coming from? Doesn't look like there's a whole lot of great options right now, but maybe it's the general adjustment of, like, role players shoot better at home. They're going to have to hope for that plus to get back in the series, I think.
Well, I think two things are kind of, like, underserved in this discussion. Defensively, they've been actually pretty decent in game 2. You held them to 105 points. They didn't shoot well from 3, but it wasn't like they just missed a whole bunch of wide open shots. Like, Dallas was sound defensively. Jason Tatum looks like a batting average, 6 of 22. You know what I mean? Like, that's where he's at right now. But Jason Tatum played, I believe, a good floor game. Like, this looks like the finals he had in 22 against Golden State, except without, like, full meltdown. You know what I mean? Like, he had double-digit assist games, I think, in the 2 games that they won. I feel like he had 13 assists in 1 game and maybe 9 in the other. So,
very good, Mr. Goodwill, because I looked this up, because tonight he had 12 assists, and I said, that's got to be a career playoff high. No. game one against the Warriors in 2022, 13 assists. So without even looking it up right off the bat, look at this man.
I'm a oracle of useless information, Dan Devine. I've told people this before. I can name every MVP from the year I was born.
That's incredible.
And not even blink. Like, you can just name a random year and I will point and it'll just roll off the tongue very easy.
Almost 1 o'clock in the morning, so I'm not going to start doing that now. But we'll keep that parlor trick on deck. Maybe we do that when we're seeing one another in Dallas.
Okay, how about this? It's because John Gennaro is probably going to lose his mind. Let's just give me three, and I'll write them one off for you.
Sure. 1983,
the year I was born. Well, that was Moses Malone, but that wasn't the year I was born.
Oh, when were you born?
84.
Oh, see, every time we talk, you're like, I think I'm older than you, but I am, in fact, 2 years older than you. All right. All right. 87.
Magic.
96.
Jordan.
2002.
Tim Duncan.
All right. I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell this man that he can't do what he says. He says he's going to do something. He takes care of it. I think we got to have a lot of respect for that.
Easy work. Now, speaking of easy work, right? Before we go to this break, I do want to touch on giving Drew Holiday a lot of love here. Like, in the same way that you talk about Jason Tatum doing all of the things except for scoring, Drew Holiday is doing all of the things and scoring, right? He's making all these critical plays. He's defending Kyrie Irving, making those shots really difficult, forcing Kyrie to go left, even though Kyrie might be the greatest, you know, in the paint score, you know, with both hands, ambidextrous, all that other type of stuff. He's making it look very difficult. And he's kind of inside track for finals MVP. If we were to do such a thing, like, I just think missing piece, because if he's your fourth or fifth best player, then baby, you got problems on the other side.
Man,
big problems.
Absolutely. Finishes with 26 points. I think it was 11 of 14 from the floor.
Yep.
11 rebounds, and it's so, you know, you think of Drew Holiday and you think of him functionally and as we've seen him for his whole career as a point guard, right? Or a combo guard at most, like on the ball. In Boston, he's like, you know, the guy that he's essentially replacing, Marcus Smart, used to joke around and call himself a stretch six. And where it's like, what position is Drew Holiday? Well, where did a lot of his buckets come from tonight? From the dunker spot, right? He's like, he's spacing the floor under the basket. And I think it's kind of fascinating because he's a player where when the ecosystem is functioning, he looks, you know, he is like the beneficiary of a lot of it. So I don't want to diminish Drew Holiday's individual contributions because those 26 and 11, that was gigantic. And to say nothing of the defensive plays, as you mentioned, the huge, you know, gets the deflection, turns into a steal, winds up at the three-pointer, like huge momentum shifting plays. You know, I think he had four offensive rebounds, like extra possessions he's getting. He's doing everything they need him to do. But a lot of it, when you look back at those shots, a ton of it is generated from Tatum downhill, Brown downhill, right? So it's when we've got our spacing, when we've got the five out, we've got Porzingis in the slot, or we've got Horford in the corner, however we move the chess pieces around. And it's beat a man on a board, get a ball screen, turn the corner, get downhill. And it's Drew with his spacing at the dunker spot or in the corners, which he never spent this much time in the corner anywhere he's been before. And it was a big adjustment for him all season long. Get used to being able to take those shots. And also what you do if you don't take the shot. The driving angles are different. The spacing is different. Where you are on the floor, get comfortable with it. He was so comfortable at, all right, you're like, I get the ball on the swing in the corner, closeouts coming at me, quick fake, and I go. And it's like getting right to the rim, being able to use the backboard or the rim as a shield off the shot blocker. He had all of those things fluid and flowing and just so comfortable in what they're asking of him in that offense. But so much of it is, it starts with Tatum around a high ball screen or Brown in ISO against a defender he can beat. And then once the defense collapses, that's when you get the spray. And then he's make all of those plays. He has to make them, but they are there to be made to a larger degree because of the way that the rest of that offense is just stress testing that Dallas defense possession after possession. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, this has not been overwhelming Boston defense, overwhelming Boston offense. Dallas's defense played well enough to win in some of these games, but it is the challenge of dealing with all of those ways you can get broken down and then, you know, 90 possessions at a time, 95 possessions at a time, it is a lot to deal with. And if you lose focus for a second, or if you lapse on a rotation for a second, if your low man's not ready for a second, all of a sudden Drew Holiday is putting the ball in the basket and putting your defender back there with him. And so, yeah, absolutely sensational game from him that I think is like the kind of thing that if you wind up with like an Andre Iguodala MVP type situation, it certainly wouldn't be unwarranted. Drew Holiday has played sensational, but I think it's also a manifestation of this is what this team looks like when it's cooking, and it provides those opportunities for other guys. And Drew Holiday has absolutely taken advantage of them.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that, because it could wind up just being Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
It could wind up being Jason Tatum if he turns it around. But anything can happen. A lot can happen over the next couple of games as we go to Dallas. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the next two games in Dallas and what, if anything, they can do to change the fortunes. You're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to The Good Word. Of course, you guys know the numbers. If you go up 2-0 in the NBA Finals, 86% of the time, you're going to win the series. We've seen it go in the other direction, most notably in 2016. The Cavs come back from down 2-0, down 3-1 to beat the Warriors, Game 7, all that type of stuff, right? Kyrie Irving brought up that tonight with Dan Devine. Kyrie Irving brought that up. He said, I did not play well in the first two games of that series, and I turned it around. And I didn't remember Kyrie having a bad game 1 and 2 against Golden State in that series. I looked it up. He was like 7-22 in one of those games. I was like, oh, okay. And then he had like the master opus, you know, the 40-point balls against Klay Thompson and, you know, busting Steph's ass and everything else. All right, cool. Can they depend on that? Or is there another route? Is there another, maybe we can get downhill and break off Derek Lively and Gafford and start finishing over the top of the defense again? Or is that route completely closed?
I don't think it's completely closed, because I think we saw enough, or at least enough success at that. It requires like Luka being a battering ram for a quarter and a half, right? And that was effective. I think it was Luka had 23 points in the first half, and then in the second half it was only 9, but then he had 8 assists. So like it did open up the playmaking game. The question for Kidd, though, is like, how do we manipulate the pieces so that, if we're able to get Luka pound, pound, pound downhill enough to create to force Boston to bring more help, so that when those passes go out, it's like instead of it being a kickback to Josh Green, it's a kickback to Kyrie Irving, right? Like, how do we move the pieces around enough to where you get, or if you're moving, you're able to get Luka with that space, it's to create a corner shot for those guys, like a more comfortable in their game shot for those guys. And I think, you know, Kidd had mentioned that after the game, like that's where we need to go. And then also the other part, like, don't turn the ball over, right? Like, it doesn't look like, it doesn't pop off the screen, like 15 turnovers. It's not a gigantic number. But it's that I think 10 of
it's when they happen.
They're timely. Absolutely. They're timely. And then also, It's the nature of them. It's not like, you know, we throw the ball into the 15th row. 10 of those 15 were live ball turnovers. Boston had 10 steals in this game, and they scored, I look this up, cleaningtheglass.com, 2.17 points per possession after a steal. So basically every steal guaranteed bucket, and sometimes you were getting the hook on the three-point shot. So like those are absolute killers, especially when your offense is not functioning at the level you want it to. You can't afford to give them, you know, you finally got them in jail a little bit off on defense, you're slowing them down. You can't give them the easy life. You can't let them, you know, it's the pick sixes from Jaylen Brown in game one. You can't let them just get downhill and be dunking the ball that way. So there's room to clean up. There's room to clean up the ball possession. Obviously, Dallas has been a fantastic turnover avoiding team all season. That's part and parcel of the way that Kyrie and Luka can dominate the ball, and the, you know, how comfortable you feel with them generating something good. So there's clean up that. It's got to be like, hey, this is not satisfying analysis. Kyrie Irving cannot play, cannot finish, cannot shoot the way that Kyrie Irving has played in these first two games. It's not like against Oklahoma City when we're playing him, making him a facilitator, and then he was getting off 9, 10, 11 assists. Like, that's not happening in this series. So it's just, if you are not a blunt force instrument of scoring force, you are not going to be contributing at a high level on the offensive end. And so that, like, they need that from him. They can't just be Luka pounds, pounds, pounds for a quarter and a half, and then we hope for the best. Kyrie has to pick up the slack when Luka goes to the bench. He's got to score in those lineups, especially when Boston's not hitting shots. So, yeah, we have not seen Dallas's best game offensively. Boston obviously has a ton to do with that, but Dallas needs to not Jason Kidd often talks about with Luka, you got to participate on defense, right? You got to be an active participant. They got to participate in their own salvation on offense. Can't have stupid possessions, can't have empty possessions, can't throw the ball all over the place. And when you get those rare clean looks against the Celtics defense, you got to cash out. You cannot squander those opportunities because you're just not going to get that many of them.
Yeah, they don't play the same way that Minnesota plays.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota funnels you down the lane, and then, you know, they're going to make a decision. Boston doesn't make decisions because their point of attack defense at the top is so good. Nobody's going to be in rotation. Nobody's going to overhelp. Nobody's going to overextend themselves to get away from shooters. They don't even have the damn shooters, right? Another thing, Kristaps Porzingis.
Yes.
Aggravated that leg injury late in game two. Joe Mazzulla said he was fine. But you never know. Maybe he's going to get MRI, going to get some imaging before going to game three. Not that he's going to necessarily miss time, but he was still effective in game two. Not as effective as he was in game one, where he turned the game completely on its side. But that is still a matchup problem that Dallas doesn't have the personnel for. If he's 70% or 60% or whatever it is, that would be really encouraging for Dallas, because it's one less thing that they have to worry about. Because you do know this, Dan, sooner or later, the Jaylen Browns, the Jason Tatums, all those dudes are going to start hitting shots. And they're not hitting shots right now. You better hope and pray that those dudes don't find the range in them loud-ass rims in Dallas, because they got to have a microphone in the back of the backboard where you can hear, or you hit a clank. When poor Rudy Gobert was out there trying post-up moves in the Western Conference Finals, you know what I mean? At some point, those dudes are going to make shots. And even if I don't like the Celtics offense, like stylistically, I don't need to be watching somebody take 100 threes a night. Like, that ain't my type of basketball.
Sure.
But considering the way that they play, Dan, should Dallas be prepared for some level of onslaught? That, sooner or later, these guys are going to make shots? Or does Dallas say, you know what, maybe we got a handle on them defensively and we just have to fix our offense?
Yeah, I think that they have to, it's what it was, the Greg Popovich quote, appropriate fear, right? Like, you've got to be cognizant of that all those guys whose water you've turned off or who, you know, you've made it difficult on, that those guys could get it going at any given time. Like, that's the nature of the talent that you're facing. But they, I think, generally speaking, I mean, game one, it was blow by after blow by after blow by. It seemed a little bit more functional in game two. Especially starting in the second half of game one, it was a little bit tighter. The help, it was a little bit more aggressive in the gaps. It's not perfect, and some of that is a function of just the way that the shooter can spread you out. But I think they have to look at it and say, yeah, we got to be better defensively, but what we are doing, like, we've defended well enough to give ourselves a chance.
Right.
You know, basically outside of that, 23-5 run at the end of the first quarter in game one, we've generally defended well enough to give ourselves a chance. The Porzingis thing you mentioned is absolutely huge. One thing I would just note, I understand we all speak in hyperbole this time of year, especially late at night and especially after high adrenaline games. Kristaps Porzingis saying he'd die out there if he needs to. My man, it's just bad, you know, ball is not life. Do not die out there, Kristaps Porzingis. If your second leg injury that you say is not related to the soleus strain, whether, you know, remains to be seen how that all works. But, like, he got bowled over going for an offensive rebound or for a defensive rebound. PJ Washington got past him, gets to the offensive rebound. He was clearly not moving well. Daniel Gafford outran him down the floor to get one of the rare fast break buckets for the Dallas Mavericks. A lob dunk from Kyrie Irving, and Kristaps just could not catch him. I mean, the couple days off helps, but that it would be a huge swing factor. We've seen how important his ability to create those mismatches in, you know, whether it's posting up at the nail or getting a smaller guy on the block, when he sees an opportunity to be able to use that size mismatch, that has caused major problems for Dallas. And then he's been a gigantic rim protector, like a literal and figurative gigantic rim protector, blocking, getting blocked in transition, causing guys to pull down shots under the rim. Like, he makes you think. And so the, you know, removing that and then handing more of those minutes over to, like, Al Horford now goes from having, from being able to play 20-25 to having played 30-35. And, you know, we've seen in past series that can be some diminishing returns. Is Luke Kornet going to become part of the rotation again? You know, if he can't go, he had, had a wrist injury in the last series, like O'Shea Brissett. Now, you know, now you're talking about the kind of guys that Joe Mazzulla probably would not want to have to rely on at this time of the year in this biggest spot. So Porzingis's his status and, you know, where his mobility is going to be a major thing to keep an eye on. And then the other part of it, though, is, you know, you mentioned just like, are we sure Boston can't really play or can't play better than this? Like, I should be prepared for an onslaught. The results have not been what they would have hoped for. I think it's certainly a night where they went, I think they went 10 for 39 from three tonight. And they've had some of those sort of bonehead turnovers. They had some empty possessions that they, the in spots where they would like to have gotten something better. But I think that by and large, they can look at it and say, we feel pretty comfortable that we're getting something good almost every possession. And then when we're not, we're getting offensive rebounds or we're getting second chance opportunities. I think the process for their offense has been really, really sound. And even if it hasn't been elite, you know, elite point production for these first couple of games, it's been more than good enough to win. So to me, I think Dallas has to look at it and say, our job one has to be, it can't look like this on offense. It's got to look better than this on offense. Through the first two games of this series, the Mavericks have barely scored 1 point per possession. Or throughout the regular season, they were at 118 points per 100 possessions. Through the first three rounds, like 116, 117. They are like the difference between the best offense in the NBA and the worst offense in the NBA. That's how dramatic the drop-off has been in these two games. That's the swing factor for me. And so Boston can maybe get to a point where it's not outside their own possibility. They can win this series without putting their A game up on offense. So I think that's a real concern for Dallas. And if you have to look at it and say, you know, we got to be able to fight fire with fire with them, because if we can't, and if they get rolling, yeah, we're in deep, deep trouble.
Well, having to win four out of five games puts you really, really in deep, deep trouble.
That's right. We're already there. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I honestly do think, and it bears repeating, like, this is going to be a game when this series ends, Dallas is going to be kicking itself and saying, man, we could have really applied a lot of pressure, because they've always won those game twos on the road. And this was the first time that now they're going down 0-2, and they really have to start asking themselves a lot of questions. You have to start asking yourselves, do you have the manpower? Do your young players know how long you have to play? Like, this is their first time sort of going through this. And Kyrie Irving at 32 years old is like, you know, how much does he have left in this? Luka Doncic, I know he was listed as doubtful questionable.
Yeah.
Right?
He was game time decision. Right?
I didn't mention that early because y'all, I ain't going to lie to y'all. Y'all knew good and hell well Luka Doncic was going to put his ass out there and play. All right? He got a couple days of rest. He wasn't going to miss the game. He played a great game, and I wondered if he tired himself out by playing the way that he played in the first half, which goes right into the Celtics' hands. It's just a lot. Like, don't get me wrong, this series has still more twists and turns to go as far as I see it, because I have yet to believe that the Celtics are a serious outfit. So we'll see. We'll see how this completely goes. What is it, Dan?
I want to give you two things on that, because you're right. Like, I get it. I understand. It does not, you never leave those games feeling like, well, I just saw the 96 Bulls, right? Like, you don't ever feel like I watched dominance unfettered in front of me on this basketball court tonight. And yet, since the ball went up in October, they are 78-20. They outscored teams by, I think it was 11 points per 100 possessions during the regular season. They're just under that in the postseason. They're 11.3 points per 100 during the regular season, 10.7 points per 100 during the playoffs. This team that they're playing against broke the NBA's best defense, and they're making it look like it can't score. And they're two wins away from winning a title while basically looking like they haven't broken a sweat. You can say that's about the competition they've played. I'm here for that context. You can say it's because Dallas maybe threw its best punches to get out of the West and just, you know, is not able to function at that high level now. But I think they're two wins away from having an argument ender, you know, and like it, they might never be able to quiet the critiques or effectively, like, you know, in the same way that Jason Tatum is going to have to deal with the questions about like, yeah, but like, for real, like, yeah, you're doing everything. And yeah, we get it. You're an all around everybody, you know, whatever. But like, you got to start making some of these shots, man, at some point, right? Like all of these things where it's like, it just doesn't look the way that we're used to it looking. There is an outside chance this team could finish 80-20. Like at a certain point, you just, you know, like an 800 winning percentage is pretty damn impressive. Even if it doesn't overwhelm you night by night, they sure seem to win by a bunch more often than not.
No, I just think where people are first impressions, and the first impression of the Celtics has been over the past few years is that they will not take this opportunity. They will not take the opportunities in front of them. That they are the chokers. That they are the guys that you look up and all of a sudden you're down 3-0 in the series and you have to scratch and claw your way back to get to a game 7. And then we don't feel bad for you when Jason Tatum turns his ankle. You know, that sort of
no,
thing.
No, I hear you. And like, yes, they will bear the burden of proof until they are standing there holding the big gold trophy, for sure.
And even then, I still won't believe. I'm joking, Celtics fans.
He's not a hater.
Enough of y'all.
A hater to his core. You know, it's like open up the candy, see what the inside feeling is. There's a hater on hater inside there.
Enough of y'all are in my mentions on a daily basis. I don't need y'all. Y'all have been in my mentions. I never knew we had so many secrets professors. I never knew.
A lot of colleges around Boston. Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I was called a lot of names. I was called a lot of names.
Yeah.
And some of them had the hard ER at the end of it.
Yeah. They have a lot of that in Boston, too.
Like Bader. That's what I meant. Hard ER.
Yeah.
Get your minds out of the gutter. Bader. That's what I meant. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Dan Devine. Don't forget to catch him weekly on No Cap Room with Jake Fisher. And check out his show, Divine Intervention, when it comes back after the finals. Thanks to producer John, who's quite heartbroken right now and frustrated and upset. Pissed off. Sorry, John. Your team has not been great. And the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Tuesday or Wednesday, one of those days, for game 3 of the NBA Finals. Until then, everybody be safe.